In April 1939, the Italians invaded and conquered Albania. Now comes the sequel, another infamous beat of aggression with Albania used as the base of operations against Greece. General Metaxas, having been given a 3-hour ultimatum, rightly and honorably regarded it as a declaration of war. The Greek navy is very small, but will of course receive full support from our Mediterranean fleet. The Greek army can perhaps match the Italians in numbers, though it lacks certain equipment, particularly planes. But Greek soldiers will surely surpass the Italians in courage, and unlike their enemies, they are fighting in an honorable cause.
Mr. McGee, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
We hope you like us when we're angry. Hi, I'm Owen Mugen.
I'm Dean Karyanis.
And welcome back to the Angry History Podcast. We want to thank you guys again for downloading the podcast and telling friends. We are over 57,000, Dean. Is that the number of downloads?
Yeah, 57,000 downloads. Thanks very, very much for doing it. We can't emphasize enough how important it is that you people are helping us build this. You like listening. You're helping us expand Angry History, because the only real advertising is word of mouth, people liking us on Facebook and Twitter, emailing, tweeting friends, whatever. It's really nice to see, because we didn't know if anybody would want to listen to us.
Yeah. If our friends and family are any indication, I'm shocked anyone's listening. All right, now on to this week's topic. We're recording this today. This is October 24th, 2013. It's a Thursday. With an eye towards the 28th, which is a national holiday in Greece.
Yes, October 28th is Ochi Day, literally no day. Ochi is the Greek word for no. And this is the date that Greece's government refused to allow fascist Italy and Germany to occupy their nation. At the time, the Greek leader, who you heard about there, General Leonidas Metaxas, was an autocrat running the country. And Hitler had kind of hoped to tempt Greece into the fascist camp before Mussolini decided to surprise the Fuhrer and say, hey, I'm going to invade Greece.
Yeah, it's like the one nation Hitler didn't want to invade. You know, he kept going, who invades the Balkans? Who fights there in the winter? Try conquering Egypt instead. Even Nazi intel had been caught off guard. It seems so weird to say, you know, but he had this great respect for the Greeks. You know, he had already twisted many of their symbols, like the Olympic torch, into this Aryan master race myth, too.
It really sort of puts you back in history to look at it and realize that people were admiring, like that cab driver in the Pearl Harbor episode. You know, they thought, I'm sorry, it wasn't the cab driver. Who was it?
The limousine chauffeur?
No, it was the door-to-door salesman.
Yes, with a knife in one hand and the other.
And if Hitler would not have racial prejudice, he'd really be a great man, because he'd be looking out for his country.
And a lot of people thought that way about them at the time, and they did their best to try to impress people in the United States and deceive people domestically and foreign. There was that school that blew up, that grammar school, and Hitler sent flowers, I believe, and people thought, oh, he's a nice guy. And
yeah, he's a vegetarian. He doesn't drink either. Wonderful.
And to sort of set the tone for that, we have a clip of Mussolini addressing the American people here in 1929.
I am very glad to be able to express my friendly feelings towards the American nation, friendship with which Italy looks at the millions of citizens who from Alaska to Florida, from the Pacific to the Atlantic, live in the United States, is today deeply rooted in our hearts. This feeling, created by mutual interests, so contributed to the preparation of an even brighter era in the life of both nations. I greet the wonderful energy, the American peace, and I see and recognize among you sons of your land as well as ours, my fellow citizens, who are working to make America great. I salute the great American peace. I salute the Italians of America, who unite in a single love our two nations.
Ah, yes, dialects. Don't we love dialects? So we talked about how people speak, you know, and some of the things that you have to sort of pick through sometimes. And this, what did you call it during when we were listening to this?
I'd said that we were talking about in the Martin Luther King episode how easy it is if you're kind of a mimic and you watched all the Bugs Bunny as we did religiously right. and still do.
In the holy roll stuff.
Yeah, to get lost in the way someone's speaking instead of what they're saying, you hear how they're saying it. And I said, and you thought I should repeat that, here this guy is pure evil with spaghetti sauce and we're laughing at how he speaks.
It is. I mean, he sounds like Chico Marx, for crying out loud.
Friends! How we happened to come to America is a great story, but I don't tell that. When we first started out and we got an ID, you give us this grand reception. We don't deserve it. And when I say we don't deserve it, believe me, I know what I'm talking about. Huh?
Now, that message that Mussolini was selling after he left the Socialist Party and that Hitler picked up and that people were really being impressed with and thought that they were this really efficient state because of the way they'd been promoting themselves around the world. We know now that wasn't an accurate portrayal. But Metaxa looked like a natural ally to the Axis. He had been elected prime minister in 1936, but he discarded the Constitution after 4 months and instituted military rule. So he's still ruling as a military dictator. He was inspired by the fascist innovations, national service, an eight-hour workday, new labor laws. He was sort of looked like he might have been able to be tempted into the fascist camp, which would have been a huge coup for them. Here's the cradle of democracy, and they would have been able to take him away. But Metaxa lacked that broad popular support that Hitler and Mussolini were able to build enough of to sort of squash any kind of dissent. So he wasn't about to go into that camp. He probably, from what I've read, seemed like he maybe wanted to stay kind of neutral. He didn't want the British to come until he really needed them. He was sort of riding that. Right. And then all of a sudden, Mussolini shows up at your door at 3 a.m, you know, the 3 a.m. phone call we heard a lot about in the 2008 campaign here in America. You know, it says, and I'm not going to do the voice. I was tempted to. But he said, and he says, hey, let us come through your country. I'm speaking perfect English without a stereotypical.
Look at you.
That was not easy.
No, it wasn't. But also, Greece has sort of been faced with these choices throughout recent history of, do you go with the East or do you go with the West? I mean, and this has been a perpetual problem. Even after the war, I mean, the Civil War was over that question, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I say sometimes that Greeks invented democracy, and then 20 minutes later, they invented the Civil War. Because when you really think about it, I mean, it's not a single nation state like maybe we'd think of. You know, since the Civil War, America has kind of become a single nation state, not a bunch of independent states. We needed the
Civil War. As much as people might want that to happen.
Well, they said that we needed the Civil War to turn us from, you know, these United States and from an R. People used to say the United States are, and now we say is because it's more one nation. And so, you know, other than a few.
Once our Civil War ends, maybe we can look back and see how it all worked out.
You didn't hear about Grant, huh, at Appomattox?
No. Just that whole thing.
But Metaxas' one-word declaration, "Ochi," no to the Italians, that's what inspired the Greek people. He, at the time, was dying of throat cancer, speaking of General Grant. And at that point, he became popular. And he just decided to maintain this stance and say no. And people were in the street shouting, "Ochi, ochi, ochi." He finally, kind of in this moment of his life, achieved this greatness that he was looking for. And today there's actually an Ochi Day Foundation, and it educates Americans about the profound role Greece played in winning World War II. And they single out modern day heroes who, quote, exhibit the same courage as the Greeks did in continuing to fight to preserve and promote freedom and democracy around the world.
And here's a clip from the Ochi Day Foundation, laying out just how meaningful this day was to the notion of liberty. Here, listen.
Autumn, 1940. The free world watched in fear as Hitler's tyranny consumed most of Europe. One by one, countries surrendered or quickly fell to Hitler's seemingly unstoppable Axis forces. Then at 3 a.m. on October 28, 1940, a representative of the Axis forces arrived at the home of Greek Prime Minister Ioannis Metaxas and demanded his surrender, or else his country would face an immediate and brutal military invasion. Metaxas defied expectations and replied with a single word, "Ochi." No. Less than 3 hours later, the Axis forces descended on Greece, expecting it to quickly fall. The Axis invasion was as brutal as it was sudden. The Hellenic army was heavily outnumbered and outgunned, but rather than falling back to a defensive position, the Greeks shocked the world by launching a counterattack. Despite their superior arms and numbers, the Axis forces were forced to retreat. The Greeks maintained their pursuits, chasing the invading forces back to Albania. By mid-December, just 6 weeks after the invasion had begun, the Hellenic army would occupy nearly a quarter of Albania, immobilizing over 500,000 Axis troops. This led Winston Churchill to say, "Hence, we will not say that Greeks fight like heroes, but that heroes fight like Greeks." It was the first Allied victory of the war, and an act that inspired and gave hope to the world.
It was not exactly a walk in the park for Italy, as it turns out. Now, what did they say? France gave it up in 20 days.
Denmark at 120 hours.
Yeah. And Greece lasted a little bit.
Yeah, well, saying no took some stones. I mean, this was the...
It did.
Yeah, this was the, you know, the lady there from the Orchidea Foundation says the Axis forces and Germany would end up having to come and bail them out. But even Italy at the time was considered almost an equal to Germany. And this was sort of Mussolini's attempt to prove that. He was going to show, hey, I can get an empire too. I'll conquer some people. And
right, he was around longer than Hitler. And he's, you know, he was the old, you know, dictator on the block.
Yeah, they called Hitler at first the German Mussolini, which I always found really interesting when I was a kid, you know, kind of weird thing to be known as. And, you know, they started copying each other and sort of trying to outdo each other. And Italy had five times Greece's army at this point. Greece is armed with World War One weapons, air forces, mostly biplanes. Which
what was that? There was some stat we had in the research. I think the Italians had 300 odd modern aircraft. To the Greeks, like 90-something biplanes, right?
Yeah, and they said it was a kind of a little bit useful, though, to have the biplanes. You could fly because they're fighting an asymmetrical war here and a guerrilla war and sort of trying to, you know, keep it low and buzz in. And
yeah, they had home sky advantage. I mean, it was like low cloud cover, and they were able to maneuver a lot better than the Italians.
Yeah, you know, people tell a lot of jokes that we still told, at least in the 70s when we were kids, or heard at least, about Italians and Polish people. And all this kind of goes back to these misconceptions from the war. One of them here was, in Greece, the Italians really didn't have the heart to fight the Greeks. These were their neighbors, and they didn't see the point, they say, in dying for Mussolini's glory. My grandfather said one day they were out in the fields eating souvlaki with the Italians, the Greeks were, and Mussolini comes and tells them to fight, and the Italians said, fight who? What the heck? I'm like sitting here with Spiro, and it was like if you suddenly told us to go invade Canada. In fact, when they did tell us to invade Canada in the War of 1812, a lot of the militia said, no, I'm going to stay here.
And tune in soon to the Angry History Podcast for our show, War of 1812, coming up soon. That's on the Angry History Podcast.
Sponsored by Fanta. All
right. Wild root cream oil for the hair. Well, it's interesting. My grandfather, Jack, was stationed in Anzio during the war, and one of his responsibilities was to, you know, deal with a lot of the Italian prisoners. And a lot of them, the stories go, they were just so glad to have it over.
Yeah, they would tell them, hey, go that way to the POW camp. The Greek soldiers, because they just didn't have enough men to try to, you know, they just didn't have enough. I mean, listen to that. They drive them all the way back in Albania. And there's one great newsreel clip that we listened to that the announcer says Italy thought it would be a walk in the park. I wonder why. And he said maybe it was the uniforms. I mean, these guys are literally wearing those skirts that they wear at the Acropolis. And, you know, this is not an advance. And this is the first time anyone has stopped them. I mean, you had a big country like France and them just giving up, you know, so much faster and not fighting and not pushing them back, and Ethiopia. And this was a big deal and people really built it up.
Yeah. And the way the Greece is laid out certainly helped.
Yeah, that was the big ally of theirs, just like the winter would be. And they gave Russia really a chance to use that, the Soviet Union, because they delayed it.
One of the big takeaways you hear about what this Greek resistance really did was it made Hitler pull forces away from Operation Barbarossa, which was the invasion of the Soviet Union. And it delayed that by 2 months. And next thing you know, then we have what? We have, you know, ill-equipped Germans heading into a Russian winter.
Yeah, he really didn't want to have to do this, but it was a Jack Waltz from The Godfather. A man in Hitler, man in Hitler's position could not be made to look ridiculous. He just couldn't afford that.
That's right. You know, Mussolini comes along with his olive oil voice. Making me look ridiculous. A man in my position can't afford to be made to look ridiculous. I'm going to do the whole thing. Now you get the hell out of here.
Now,
tell your thoughts no badly. That's right, I heard that story.
Now in my head, I have two Greeks sneaking into Mussolini's bedroom and leaving a goat's head. Spiro, get out of the refrigerator. What are you doing? We got to get out of here. It's Mussolini's. My grandfather actually had a piece of sort of silver chainmail that he claimed he brought back Mussolini's. I never actually met him. He's who I'm named after, but he... He said he brought that back from Mussolini's palace, that when they were fighting there and they went through and they stormed it, you know, and those guys didn't consider it looting in those days. And he just decided to borrow that from Mussolini. And my mom has it somewhere. I'd forgotten about that.
That would be great to make sure that that is located.
Yeah, she's got it, I'm sure.
Greece forced Hitler to change his timeline and set back the attack on Russia by 2 or more months. This allowed Russia crucial time to recover from earlier losses. Russia's field marshal said, "The Greek people delayed the German divisions during the time they could bring us to our knees. As well, Greece forced Hitler into the debilitating Russian winter, which marked the beginning of his end." British Prime Minister Winston Churchill said, "If there had not been the virtue and courage of the Greeks, we do not know which the outcome of World War II would have been." Because Greece was the first to stop the Axis forces and restore world hope, and because Greece's delay of Hitler inflicted a wound that would become fatal, this was one of the most courageous and consequential David versus Goliath victories for freedom and democracy in the modern world.
How did another Churchill mention getting there?
I don't know. I'm shocked. It's funny because you never talk about the guy. You don't seem to have any special reverence for him. It's just weird how it keeps popping in there.
And I wanted to mention one thing about they talk about David and Goliath. Another parallel there was stones. The Greeks actually, when they ran out of ammunition, rolled stones down on the attacking side.
I love that. That's insane. It's like, hey, use what you can, you know?
Yeah. I mean, just a will to fight. I mean, you can arm people as much as you want, as we see throughout history. But if somebody's fighting for their home and their village, that's much more reason to fight than it is
right.
For, as we said, these poor Italians. I mean, one of the generals actually told Mussolini that if they moved against Greece, he'd resign. He didn't, but he said it. I mean, they really didn't. They didn't want this fight.
Yeah, but this notion, go back to us for a second about, you know, using, you know, boulders versus, you know, somewhat modern weaponry is. George Lucas commented on this. I mean, he basically created the entire Return of the Jedi film to reflect this. And the Ewoks were the Greeks, and the stormtroopers were the Italians and the Germans. It's really true. No, it's not true. He didn't know what he was doing. Sorry.
I didn't think there was any island that was named, what's that moon, Endor? No, the moon Endor.
Endor, yeah. No, I just, for some dumb reason, because I'm a nerd, when you were talking about the boulders, it's like, I just remembered that idiotic scene where they're hitting them with sticks, little tiny sticks, and then dropping little rocks on them and all these, you know, the most powerful army in the Outer Rim is getting crushed. So,
yeah.
But hey, it does happen in real life, and it does happen because you've got a country who does not want to kneel, and they have the benefit of some wonderful geographic assets to help keep them somewhat insulated and to augment their small army into something a lot more effective than it would have been in another theater, you know?
Yeah, you got to fight sometimes strength with smarts, I guess. So, I mean, the fact that they drove them back, and in that piece, they say a lot about the Axis. That we'll get to that probably in a later one, especially the Battle of Crete.
Yeah.
There's a great movie called The 11th Day, and they talk about how, just what you said before, Greece facing this over and over, this kind of invasion. There's this little old Yaya, and she says, we've been invaded and invaded, and we just thought when the Nazis came, here they come again. And
that's right.
It's really a great story of heroism, and it gets overshadowed.
Yeah, I want to throw in that clip from our Pearl show of that Greek housewife from New York, and her pride you could hear in her voice about the Greek fighting spirit. Here that is.
I'm a housewife. I was born in Greece, but I'm an American citizen. I hate war, but I love my freedom and independence. As you know, the Greeks always fought for their freedom and independence. And I guess that's why I feel the same way about it.
I don't know why I just thought of it. I just love her. Now there's actual context for it. So.
Chris Makropoulias, who is one of our Twitter followers, is a modern-day Greek. He lives in Athens. He tweets under the name Christos Mac, that's Christos with a C, _MAK. And he tweeted us that this year...
Say his last name again?
It's Makropoulias.
Nice. When we were planning the show, we were getting tongue-tied on names a little bit because we were tired, and I was mocking Dean for being the Greek and not being able to say the last names.
Yeah, I estimate every 250 times or so, I misspell my own name, and it's always pretty good if it's just on, you know, just signing a letter or whatever.
Sure.
And I can, but it's always got to be the SATs or, you know, application for a job or something that I can't possibly replace.
It's organ donor card.
Yeah. Go rip organs out of some other. No, it was signed, clearly.
He signed. But yeah. What did he have to say?
He said the government this year had to find a sponsor to pay for fuel for the tanks participating in the military parade for Aki Day. And but he immediately wrote back and said, scratch that last tweet, too pessimistic, shocking for a Greek. Let's just say we have a long history of making a stand against all odds, which is a more positive way to remember it. And part of the legacy of the Second World War is not only so many people starving to death and being killed and dying earlier than they might have because of the malnutrition, but...
Right. What was that stat? Like, you died at 50 instead of 60. You died at...
But they also put a lot of people into the government service because that would keep them from taken away by the Nazis and put in forced labor camps. And so that was kind of their way to deny manpower to the Axis war machine. And that survives to this day with so many people working for the government. So it's really something that left a long scar on the life of Greece.
And then you come out of the war and 4 years later, you have this debilitating civil war. Because they're once again faced with this question that Greece always seems to be faced with. Do you go with the West? Do you go with the East? And from that, they've never been able to recover.
Yeah. And we'll see what happens now. This is one reason we wanted to do this show. There's the popular association, it's called, known as Golden Dawn. There's a lot of stories on them. And they reject the neo-Nazi label and the fascist description, but you've seen them out doing the Nazi salute, which they claim is a Greek salute, which is, I don't know. They didn't teach us that in Boy Scout in Troop 25 at St. John's the Baptist Cathedral in Tenafly, New Jersey. But
you were working on your shouting merit badge.
Yeah. Hey, come on now. But it's scary. I mean, as we just said with Mussolini, we don't want it to repeat where you just make jokes about these guys, a bunch of guys running around. They won 11 seats in parliament last year, and their parliament has 300 seats. They were the third most popular party. It's really growing over there just because the government has really grinded to a halt. There's no faith in public or private institutions.
No, and the things of which they're being accused are also not a laughing matter, including the murder of a left-leaning hip-hop guy.
Pavlos Fisas was stabbed to death in Athens. They said a group of 30 thugs in Golden Dawn shirts and military pants. And part of the thing about having is there's no real leadership. There's no real card carrying. I mean, this happened with some of our presidential assassins. They just claimed that they were inspired by so-and-so, and then that person was immediately cast under suspicion. It happens all the time. We talked about how you can just, when you book somebody on a TV guest, the most gutless Chiron of all on the screen is strategist, somebody who's never run a campaign for anybody. But it's, you know, hey, an excuse to get them on, and they'll put them up there against somebody who has real credentials, maybe a degree or experience doing it. But it's sort of like that with these groups. And so, you know, we'll see what happens. They just cut off their funding. They arrested a bunch of the leaders. So we'll see what happens with that. But it's probably time for the Greeks to make a decision here if they're going to say "Ochi" to this kind of future, or whether they're going to find a way to fight for democracy and take over their country in positive ways and find a way out of this whole EU mess.
Well, and it seems like you have a situation in Greece that has parallels, certainly in Germany after World War One, when you have a country that is so financially bereft of opportunity and some might say even future, that's sort of a breeding ground for this sort of extremism. I mean, you can exploit an anger and take it to a degree where, you know, you've got roaming gangs, you know, or, you know, a chancellor named Adolf eventually.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to happen in the same way now because I don't think, you know, the EU will allow it to happen or, you know, we will or no one will. But it just seems like gosh, I mean, look at international terrorism, too, and look at, you know, what we're up against. And, you know, you have a lot of these guys blowing themselves up, you know. They're poor. You know, you know, poverty is the fertile ground for recruitment for any cause.
It's not isolated to Greece. There's a lot of Greek people around the world, as everybody who's traveled probably knows, especially here in the United States. Places like Baltimore, Chicago, of course, Astoria, Queens is a big Greek mm-hmm. neighborhood. And they had a kind of a scare there where they thought a Golden Dawn office had opened up in Astoria. They were going around collecting charity items and clothes for and saying it was for Greeks and right. back home and with this crisis going on. But there's people like the Federation of Hellenic Societies of Greater New York who is watching out for that. And I think they'll try to keep them from getting a foothold here. But it's one of those things where nowadays you just put up a website, you know. And
well, that's it. You don't need brick and mortar. I mean, it may be upsetting and disturbing to be walking down, you know, a street in Astoria and then to see, you know, somebody hanging a shingle out. But goodness, you don't need it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the money's going to flow if you've got a proper web presence. It's sort of like trying to tackle the philosophy instead of, you know, a pop-up store.
And we have a clip from the Anti-Defamation League, so let's play that.
The Golden Dawn Party is a blatantly, overtly violent, racist, neo-Nazi party. And when we see neo-Nazis gaining strength in the electorate and moving from the fringes of society into the mainstream of society, that causes a great deal of concern. You have economic, political, and social turmoil and upheaval. And that's a cauldron for a witch's brew of hatred and prejudice and bigotry. The antidote is for leaders to speak out, condemn it, and prevent it from spreading.
That was the Anti-Defamation League's International Affairs Director Michael Salberg talking about Golden Dawn and the challenge that it presents over in Greece today.
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, and for so many reasons dating from antiquity onward, you know, I'm rooting for Greece. We owe a lot to Greece.
Yeah, and people are noticing it today. And I wanted to say of owing them a lot and things like respect and, you know, never tending to make light of these things. The Evzoni are the light infantry in the mountains of Greece, and they're mostly ceremonial today, but those are the gentlemen that I talked about before and said about them making the comment in the 40s newsreel clip about maybe it's the skirts. They're not skirts, of course.
Right.
The Soldati says they're called colloquially these soldiers. That's a kilt. Fustanella, they're not skirts. So I better make that because I don't want to have to go to a Thanksgiving dinner with all these Greeks and tell me, hey, it dates back to the Turkish occupation. That's an honorable profession. You know, maybe in the end it did make being the most popular image of the Greek soldier. Maybe it did make the Axis a little bit cocky, thinking they could take these guys on. And they ended up getting their nose really bloodied and really changed the course of the war. So
absolutely.
Way to go.
Hey, you wrote a... you and your wife wrote a cookbook, a Greek regional cookbook a few years ago, which I love and I use all the time. It's stained. It's got the look of a properly well-loved and used cookbook. But there are no references to Ochide in it. There's a lot of cultural stuff, but you guys, you hadn't collected any stories at that point about this.
Yeah, when we wrote Regional Greek Cooking, our idea was to sort of take a tour of Greece, all these regions that we just talked about, because people do identify so much more with their village and their town and their island, and so they will improvise on how they cook and make little variations, and you can tell how people cook. I remember when I was a kid going over to their houses, and you'll tell it by, you know, the different way they'll make something like ravani, which is a sweet cake that they'll make for your name day, the name of the saint that you're born on.
Right.
Different ways to make moussaka. It's all a different recipe. There's no one way to make it. You improvise. Usually recipes aren't even written down. And I thought, why is there no food associated with Ochide? Because here, you know, at least that I know of, not being in Greece, there's no food that you eat on that day. And I realized why. It's because if you ask your wife or your husband to cook dinner tonight, they both say, Ochi! I'm not cooking. So that's just it. They just will not cook. Okay. So that must be why.
Sometimes it's the easy answers, my friend.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, this was a lot of fun for me to do personally. Always is when we can get in touch with our roots and try to wrap it up in something in history that we can look back on and take a little inspiration out of. Again, you can learn more at the Ochide Foundation. We'll post a bunch of links at angryhistory.com, and you can learn more about this pivotal time in the history of the world.
That's That's right.
This song you're listening to, by the way, is a Greek resistance song called Saltadoros. Small groups of teens would steal things from Nazi convoys. The word literally translates to somebody who takes something when nobody's looking. They would distract the Nazis and they would take food or whatever they could trade for food when they were starving during the occupation. And this song is a tribute to that.
Well, thanks a lot for tuning in, as always. I'm Owen Mugen.
I'm Dean Karyanis.
We'll see you next time.
Visit angryhistory.com to learn more about the topics discussed on today's episode. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You can also like us on Facebook, tweet us at Angry History, or send us an email to angry@angryhistory.com.